Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, also the top Republican on the Senate's Energy Committee, is with us. Senator Murkowski, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Jeff.
Now, your colleagues, Senators Graham and Kerry, appear to have reached an agreement, in principle anyway, on a possible bipartisan approach to climate change legislation. What do you make of the ideas that they've laid out?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm encouraged that you can have a Democratic senator from a state like Massachusetts joined together with a Republican senator from the state of South Carolina to sit down and talk honestly and intellectually about how we can advance climate change legislation. I think it's good. I'm going to be meeting with Senator Graham later this week to talk about more of the specifics of what he is considering. But the proposal that was outlined in the opinion piece that ran this weekend, I think, holds out some promise.
In general, and I understand that the devil's always in the details with these things, but in general, is this the sort of thing you think you might support someday?
Well, again, we need to recognize that there has been no legislation, there's been no draft put out there. It's been maybe a 1,000 words that have outlined what two individuals feel could be a constructive framework. It's something that I think makes sense to look at and to go more into the details. I like the reality that they present, that in order to meaningfully reduce our emissions, we must have enhanced nuclear in this country. I think there's also a recognition that increased domestic production of our resources, whether they be coal or whether they be oil or gas, I think is a recognition that this goes towards our energy security. And what we need to do is to figure out those technologies that will allow them to be more clean burning, to reduce our carbon footprint. So there's some good components to what has been very loosely outlined by Senators Kerry and Graham.
You're the top Republican on the Senate's Energy Committee. How do you see those other elements of energy policy coming together with a climate change bill? I mean, it might strike some as an unusual kind of logic to try to meet the challenge of climate change by, for example, expanding offshore drilling. But you see these coming together.
I do. And let's put it into perspective. Our committee, the Energy Committee, advanced a bipartisan bill earlier this summer that, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of our chairman, Chairman Bingaman, really does work to reduce our emissions in a meaningful way. We've got good, strong provisions in there that relate to energy efficiencies and conservation. We lay forth a plan as to how we build out our renewables, how we can do more to help facilitate this next generation of energy technology through a clean energy bank. We also have an increased domestic production piece. I look at what we developed in committee, again, a bipartisan bill. We're not seeing a lot of that of late in the Senate. And I look to that and say we could move that through the Senate, move that through the Congress, and say, I think very convincingly, that we have taken meaningful steps to reduce our emissions, to enhance our energy security and our national security through a measure such as this. So when I look to, again, the framework that is being proposed, when I see pieces that could have been pulled from our energy bill from the Energy Committee, I say, yeah, this has taken us in the right direction.
Now, you're concerned that without action by Congress, the EPA could very well move ahead with regulation on greenhouse gases. Is that part of what's driving things here, you think?
Well, I think that the threat or the stick of the EPA over Congress's head that they will act if Congress fails to implement policies to to deal with carbon emissions, I think, is very real. We know it. They have already taken steps. When it comes to mobile sources of emission, I think it's fair to say that it, as it relates to the stationary sources of emission, the EPA could be moving to regulate those as early as March of this coming year. I think that that is a very real threat, and I am one who believes that that climate policy should be developed by the Congress. The EPA is tasked with a very specific mission, and that is the reduction of emissions. They don't have to look at the overall impact to the economy. They don't have to answer to constituents that are saying, I can't believe what this is doing to my energy costs within my home or within my business. I think, and it's not just Lisa Murkowski, it's so many of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, it's people within the administration who have said all along that they believe that, that climate change legislation needs to be coming from the Congress, that these policies need to be moving from the Congress, not having a heavy-handed EPA using their ability to regulate a very blunt instrument, using that to set the policy for this country when it comes to climate change.
Hmm. What is the Republican Party's message on climate change? Is it we have ideas to address this important issue, as I think I hear you saying, mm-hmm. or is it there's no problem here, climate change is a hoax, as we often hear from your Republican colleague, Senator Jim Inhofe?
Well, I do believe that there is a general consensus that where we can reduce our emissions responsibly and meaningfully, we should be doing so. We should be using the technologies that we have today and that we can continue to develop to tomorrow to responsibly reduce our emissions. And in my proposal, when I say what it is that we have to offer, I keep pointing to the legislation that moved out of the Energy Committee earlier this summer. If you talk to, say, for instance, my colleague Senator Alexander from Tennessee, he will be very quick to point out that what we need to do is we need to bring online 100 new nuclear plants within this country. We need to move towards battery-powered vehicles. We must be producing more of our own energy domestically, and he will tick off a number of items that are within his portfolio of ideas as to how we reduce our emissions. So I think within the Republican conference, you have a whole host of good, positive ideas as to how we can make a difference and not necessarily limited or restricted to a cap-and-trade proposal, the likes of which we saw come out of the House, the Democratic Waxman-Markey bill.
Mm-hmm. If I understand it correctly, what Senators Graham and Kerry are talking about still, at its essence, is a cap-and-trade bill. They didn't use that term. But I think they're still talking about a cap-and-trade bill with these additional elements of...
I'm going to be meeting with Senator Graham to discuss more of the details, but it is my understanding that there is that component piece.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am one of those lawmakers who... I haven't shied away from the topic of cap and trade. I was a co-sponsor of Senator Bingaman and Senator Spector's cap and trade legislation a year or so ago, and I looked at that legislation and said, now here is a thoughtful way to provide for some level of certainty within the market. Because there was that safety valve feature mm-hmm. that was contained in Bingaman Spector. But it did so in a way that I felt was more responsible, didn't kick the economy in the head, did allow for for instance, adaptation funding. It looked at, again, the bigger aspect of climate change. So, if in fact the germ of the idea that Senators Kerry and Graham are circulating does have a cap and trade piece in it, that's not enough to make me shy away from having the conversation. I think it's imperative that we be looking at all the options that are out on the table. The only option should not be just a cap and trade mechanism. Somehow or other, there's been generated this notion that you're either for Boxer Kerry or you're against protecting the environment. And it's way too simplistic, and it ignores the fact that there's plenty of senators out there from both parties who are very concerned about the environment and the economic well-being of their constituents. Let's talk about what the options are that are out there. We had a very interesting hearing this morning in the Energy Committee focused on the cost associated with Waxman-Markey. And Senator Corker, I don't think, misses an opportunity at our hearings to ask and to probe very deeply. Well, if we're looking to provide some certainty and allow for transparency, wouldn't a carbon tax be a better way to go? Now, I'm not suggesting that my colleague would support one, but he is supporting a carbon tax. But he's willing to put that out on the table and say, hey, folks, let's talk about what the options are. I participated in a blog this past week with the National Journal, where I kind of set the questions out for discussion. And the question was, you know, at what point did we decide that cap and trade was the only answer to respond to climate change? And it was a very interesting dialogue among the participants about the multiple options that are out there and the reality that there's more focus on this cap and trade component than there are many other parts of what is contained in whether it's Waxman-Markey or Kerry Boxer. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we should forget that in, for instance, the Kerry Boxer bill, you've got out of a 1,000-page bill, you've only got about a couple hundred pages that are focused on the cap and trade. The rest is other aspects as they relate to how we deal with climate change. Mm-hmm. So we kind of get fixated on the cap and trade piece.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a sense that some Republicans are willing to start rethinking this? Do you hear from your colleagues that they're
rethinking in what way?
Their position on climate change legislation.
I think that people's views on climate change clearly evolve as we see additional information, as we watch the world around us. I will tell you, a couple years ago when I was looking at the Bingaman Spector bill for the first time, I was looking at it through the lens of a senator representing a state where we're seeing some very real erosion issues as a result of loss of sea ice. Mm-hmm. and villages that are facing the reality of having to relocate and the appreciation that relocation is very, very expensive. So I was looking at that legislation saying, okay, from an adaptation perspective, coming from a state like mine where climate change is not just a theoretical exercise, it's happening, how can this help in Alaska? Well, now fast forward to where we are today. We've got an economy that is in the tank. We've got unemployment across the country that is in double digits. You know, some of the indicators are looking a little bit better, but the reality is our economy is very weak right now. So I'm looking at the proposals that are out there, whether it's the House bill or whether it's Kerry Boxer, and I'm saying, okay, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but in implementation of this, is it possible to put in place what is being proposed when our economy is struggling as much as it is? And so you not only develop a greater understanding about issues as time passes, but I think you also need to keep put it in context of where the country is, where the world is today.
If a bill along the lines of what Senators Kerry and Graham outlined were to emerge, something that was basically cap and trade, but with strong elements of support for nuclear power, additional production of domestic energy sources, is that something you might support even if it's just not filibustering the bill? In other words, would you be inclined to support cloture for such a bill, allowing it to be voted on in a simple up or down way?
Well, as you have pointed at least once in our conversation, the devil is always in the details. I would really want to understand how their proposed cap and trade piece works. I have some real apprehension about the opportunity for manipulation under a cap and trade proposal. I have some real concerns about how the offsets would work. I have real concerns about distribution of allowances. So those types of issues would have to be made far more clear to me before I would venture a guess as to where I might go.
Given what you see with climate change already happening in Alaska, though, do you have qualms about filibustering a climate change bill when we hear from scientists that we must act now?
Well, I'll tell you, if it were a climate change bill that would be economically, financially devastating to my state, I have to tell you, you've got to weigh all these things. You've got to balance all that. And you know, we heard testimony today from Dr. Elmendorf from CBO. We had Dr. Parker from CRS. We had Richard Newell from EIA, a couple other gentlemen from EPA, all who had looked at the various different models to better understand the costs associated with Waxman-Markey. And not one of them was asked to look at whether or not, if this were to be put in place, whether or not we would actually be able to arrest what is happening with climate change. I asked the question, well, would we see sea levels recede? Would we see would we see any reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions were this to be put in place? And in fact, they said that no, they weren't asked to model that.
Well, if I may, that sort of assumes that we have some international aspect here as well, because obviously we can't solve a global problem by ourselves.
And that is one point that oftentimes is kind of left out of the question. One of the questions that was asked this morning was, well, you know, a cap and trade type of an approach worked with acid rain, but in fact, one of the reasons that was successful was because that was a domestic program, and we weren't looking to develop breakthroughs in technology. It was not something where we were hoping that India and China were going to follow suit. And so I think it is very important for our conversations that we appreciate that this is not just the United States acting alone, acting in isolation here.
Yeah, but is that really a good argument against this bill? I mean, if we don't act, that reduces the chances of an international agreement to somewhere around zero, doesn't it?
That's correct, but we need to act in a way that is responsible. So mm-hmm. It goes back to your question about, well, could I object to a bill that addressed climate change? Again, mm-hmm. It depends how it addresses it. If it's going to cripple the economy with no appreciable benefit, then what favors am I doing to anybody in Alaska? How am I helping? How am I helping them out if what we have done through our policy is to cripple our economy, mm-hmm. limit our ability to advance technologies because we simply don't have the access to credit to the markets to advance this. We don't have the ability to stand behind the technology that's going to pull us through mm-hmm. Climate change advances. Hmm.
If I remember correctly, though, the government's assessment of the cost of the Waxman-Markey proposal broke down on a per-day basis to roughly the equivalent of the cost of a postage stamp per American household. That hardly sounds like crippling the economy to me.
Well, and I asked Dr. Elmendorf that question specifically. I said, you know, you have calculated that cost out, and you say that in 2020, that's where we are, is $175 per family. And I said, by 2020, we know, in fact, that the most drastic cuts have simply not yet hit us, to which he conceded and said that they had since the Waxman-Markey had moved out, they have since revised that. They have gone back and they have done a new assessment as to what it would cost in 2020, 2030, as well as 2050. And if you go to the out years, that's where it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $900-some-odd per family. I don't recall what the 2030 number was, but the other members of the panel all conceded, as did Dr. Elmendorf, that there are so many variables, there's so many uncertainties. We don't know mm-hmm. About the availability of, say, for instance, the international offsets, and are they theoretical or are they real? We don't know about our ability to really advance the technologies that we're counting on. When Dr. Newell was asked, well, how many new nuclear facilities would be required to achieve the goals that you have set out in your modeling, the rough calculation that I received was about 96 new nuclear facilities, I believe it was by 2020. And we're just not going to be able to be there, as much as I would like to think that we could advance nuclear that quickly. And so, again, it's the ability that we have to translate what we're putting on paper into something that is going to be achievable.
Mm-hmm. What do Alaskans tell you about climate change? You're an oil state, but you're also a state on the front lines of climate change, already feeling the effects mm-hmm. of global warming through coastal erosion, ice loss, permafrost melt, and those drunken trees that I see pictures of up there. What do Alaskans tell you about this?
They say be careful. Be cautious. I think there is a very clear recognition that as a state, we are a resource state, and that is how we have always derived our wealth, whether it was from fur seals before we were even purchased from Russia and become part of the territories of the United States, or whether it was our gold or now our oil. We have always been a resource-based state, and we're far enough away, and we've got other issues that come with a small population that, in my view, we will always be a resource-based state. But we also care a great deal for the land that gives us so much. So we've always fought to preserve that balance. How do you access the resource while still preserving the beauty, the ecosystem, the wildlife that we have? How can we continue to have it all? And the only way that you can do it is exercising great caution, making sure that as we do our development, we do it in concert with the environment, with the wildlife, with the subsistence users. And sometimes we have failures, and those failures haunt us for a long, long time. But I think we believe that we have demonstrated good stewardship of the land, and we believe that doing it responsibly is the right approach. So when constituents say, "Lisa, we think it's responsible to be reducing our emissions and doing what we can to stop, for instance, the erosion that we're seeing from some of our coastline," it requires a very, very fine balance. It's not easy, and it's not cheap.
So how would you sum up where you are? What's your thinking on a climate change bill right now in terms of your possible support for a climate change bill?
I am watching carefully with the proposals that have been generated thus far. But I am also optimistic that at this point in the process, you have people of goodwill and good intentions that continue to talk, to try to deal with one of the greatest challenges that our nation faces.
So it sounds to me like you're warming up to the idea, cautiously optimistic about being able to support something.
Well, you know, when you say support something, again, I steer clear from anything like that, because we don't have anything that I would view as supportable yet. What we have from Graham and Kerry is an op-ed piece, and we'll get more of the details about that. But again, any time that you can have colleagues from different parts of the country, from different political persuasions, coming together to talk about what some of the proposed solutions are, that's a good thing.
All right. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.